to Have I Got Games For You, a show where we talk about games news, releases, and generally waffle about whatever is going on in the world of video games. This show is part of the Game Dev London podcast that has a bunch of amazing interviews with industry professionals and really useful stuff. I'm your host, Alex Jones, and this week I'm joined by the wonderful Stuart DeVille. How are you, Stuart?
Yeah, I'm very good. Thank you very much.
I was just saying, I've had such a busy week this week, and then maybe that's just every week in the life of game dev.
Yeah, especially people like us who just, there's a fair few game devs like us who just love to be busy. Every time I'm going to be less busy, I go and accept a couple of projects, or I go and add something, and I'm like, oh, I'm insanely busy.
I was like, I'm just going to run my own studio, but also come and host this podcast as well, and then just keep adding to the things. Like, if there's a minute of free time, it's just filled with something else.
Yeah. Literally just give me more work, apparently, and then I'm happy. But also, I will complain about it. And then when I don't have so much to do, I'll be sitting here going, I don't know what to do with myself.
Yeah, you're kind of like, oh, I just really need to relax. And then you put 5 minutes aside to relax, you're like, now I'm really bored.
Yeah, my brain literally just goes, no. My partner like often complains because I will pick up my phone when we're doing like anything, literally anything. And she'll be like, you're not working, are you? And I'll be like, no.
That's not an email, is it?
If she asks me direct questions like that, I can literally go, no. And then she'll go, are you talking shop in Discord with someone? And I'm like, yeah.
It's like hobby friend work. It's fine. Have you ever suffered with burnout, or are you just always like riding the line?
So I used to, I used to regularly, probably something like every 6 months, just be hitting burnout. And then dealing with it by working through it. But I don't recommend
burning out by continuing to burn out. Yeah.
But now, like, I'm a lot better at like making sure I take actual time. Well, I say that I've put support in place, so I allow my partner to critique me, and I will listen. So she'll be like, you've been flat out for a month. And normally I get a bit grumpy as well, so she's like, I don't like the grumpiness. This needs to stop. Like, when she'll either be like, when is that going to happen? So I can go, oh, well, because I most of the time I can't just be like, I'm going to drop the three projects that I work on.
I'll just stop working as well.
Yeah. But yeah. Normally I can be like, well, you know, one of them is wrapping up at the end of this month, and so maybe I can plan some space and stuff. She's like, okay, let's do that. So, and now, end of this month, we're going on holiday for my birthday. So that's like a forced break.
When's your birthday?
End of March, 31st.
What day? The 31st. I'm the 24th. I was like, oh my God, where's my birthday, twins?
We're both Aryans, right? Wait, is that the right term for people who are Aries? I hope so.
I mean, it is, but it has other connotations.
Not the best.
A ram situation.
Yeah. A ram.
I don't necessarily buy wildly into star signs, but it is funny how it can still impact on how you view yourself, because you know that you're in this like stubborn,
especially
strong category.
Especially when I was younger, like it was part of my identity, like really weirdly. You know, like how there's this thing that like people who are similar flock together. I think it's massively true of people who are neurodivergent. It just so happened that like probably 50% of my friend group were born in and around my birthday. And so like having joint birthdays, like my best friend of like 20 plus years, our birthday is both his has just happened.
There was like, when I did A-level psychology, there was this study, I think it was to do with children that were born on a Wednesday in a particular like isolated tribe were viewed in a particular way, and then they always lived up to that because they viewed themselves in the way that they were named after that day. And so it's like this self-fulfilling prophecy of you just think it so you become it, which is interesting in its own right.
For sure. Like I think I always had like kind of an interest in drawing stuff and being creative. But once I found out that like that was like an Aries trait, and I just started going, well, it's clearly part of me. And so I leaned in, and the more you lean into something like that, the better you get at it. I used to sit in a pub with my friends fairly often. You know, when you're a student, there's not a lot going on. And I would sit there with a sketch pad and a pencil, and they would be like, can you draw a giraffe on a unicycle? And I'd be like, yep. And then I'd like caricature all of my friends. So, and that just, yeah, it was part of who I was. So I just got better at it.
So interesting. Anyway, diversion from games completely.
Yeah, that's complete divergence.
Let's talk about some new game releases we've had recently. I mean, I haven't had the time to play any of these personally, so it's terrible because it's not that up to date for me. But Final Fantasy VII Rebirth is one of the most recent ones everyone's been talking about. And there's been a bit of chat about the use of like mini games within the game.
Interesting.
And some people like it, and some people are finding it almost like it's adding time to their experience, which they don't really want to be doing.
Is it a case of like, I'm not like a massive Final Fantasy fan. I never really got into that whole like tactical turn-based waiting stuff. There's been games that I've played since where like I kind of got in, but because I never got into Final Fantasy when everyone else was getting into it, I was just kind of like, that's someone else's thing. That's not really my thing. Mm. But I guess when you're making a game, like from the studio's perspective, I guess, yeah, they're thinking of like how to like make it better, how to, like all of these different things. And for them, they're probably thinking, and probably during playtesting, they've found like, oh, this is a really cool, fun little addition. But I'd be curious to know how much of their fan base they spoke to. if the fan base
like
who's playtesting
it, yeah.
Yeah, because if you're getting complaints from people that are like, that this isn't really a Final Fantasy experience, then they've either shoehorned in content for the sake of shoehorning in content, which they may or may not have done.
Or
they just haven't tailored it enough to the experience that it feels, that for the players it feels out of place.
Yeah, interesting. I don't remember anything like that in the previous one, because I played quite a lot of it. Like, I always get stuck in Final Fantasy games, so I've played like 10, 12 and the 7 remake, but never finished.
But it's all like story, plot, battle, prep for battle, right? That's the...
Yeah, a bit of like exploration things. Yeah, like 10 I really enjoyed, and they had like Blitzball, which is kind of like basketball in the air, as like a game that you could join, and it's sort of a bit like the Quidditch games in the Harry Potter games and stuff, so I just play that as a kid on its own.
See, for me as a game developer, that would be the kind of thing where I'm like, people love this, let's take that out of here and see if it's got legs elsewhere. But yeah,
that's true. I also read about, there's a game called Potions: A Curious Tale, which is an indie game. And I actually found it on TikTok before it was kind of picked up by some of the more newsy outlets. I guess it was a little bit before release. And the creator did like quite a cute little video, and they've done like a live action trailer for the game, even though the game doesn't have like video in it. And it's obviously managed to go viral on TikTok and things like that. And they worked really hard and released it on Steam, to the point where they made it on the front page. And then within a couple of days, like new releases came, and it's just like bumped off of that list. And it's really quite brutal. And I think they felt like they'd worked really hard to get to that place. And then it wasn't even necessarily new releases. It was like remake releases on Steam for like whatever AAA games. I can't remember what it was.
I think and I then have heard about that.
You just like lose that momentum. And it's so key for indies as well, getting that Steam traffic, because it's a lot of sales ultimately from being on there.
I think she's been quite clever about it though, right? Because even though that happened, she immediately took to TikTok to make a video about it and create content around it. And then you, once that becomes a thing, like, I don't know how big it's got, but like, I can, you could potentially see that becoming like a fairly big story, and then her game gets really big media. So I think it absolutely sucks when big studios do these things, like these, because they've done that without thinking.
It's kind of an attack on indie dev.
they weren't thinking, oh, this is going to wipe out all
gonna bury
the
this
indies.
Game
and they're not watching to see, like, there's too many small indies for them to even I mean, they're big enough. Maybe there's a balance to be had, right? Like, how much homework should they have done to make sure that they weren't affecting small studios? How much of a big deal is it? Because if it hadn't have been a big studio release, it could have just been that, like, a whole bunch of indies released at the same time, and you'd be in the same situation. You'd be bumped down the list. So I'm not saying that the big bads aren't bad. And I don't even particularly think of them as big bads. I just think that they, because they're giants, they're making big steps, and that they're not paying attention to us little guys that are floating around beneath them. It's kind of an awful analogy, but that kind of is how it is, especially when it comes to like the platforms and for small studios to gain kind of traction and to be featured on like main pages and stuff. It's really hard. Even if you've got like a good relation with a certain platform, it's still really hard to get yourself bumped up. And so she probably did like a whole bunch of planning and stuff and was ready for her being in that position, and then to be removed immediately by something that isn't, like you say, it wasn't even new games for the most part, right? It was just shiny reboots or redos, just so that they could take, so that the big studios could take advantage of, it was the Steam sale, wasn't it?
I think it's like where you have like the new game releases bit on the Steam front page. I think it's through there. And then obviously like the more traction any game has, the further up the list, and there's only so many slots.
I think the thing is as well, like, because they're not new games, they shouldn't have been able to be in there in the first place, really. Like,
it's like a new release rather than a... But yeah, that's maybe a thing that Steam could look at, is having a different section for re-releases or remakes.
The problem that we've always had with Steam is that Steam doesn't care. Steam has... I've never heard any developer ever go, oh, I'm really... Like, you don't have... or at least I'm not aware of there being any like account managers. No one from Steam talks to you when you upload your game. It's mostly an automated process. And they, from their end, they try and make it like as easy as possible for us to upload and to put everything that we need to on our pages so that we can promote, so we can do the best that we can do so that we're on there. And then as far as they're concerned, it's up to us to go and find ways to promote ourselves and to drive traffic to their website. There's probably a place for there to become, but there's no one fighting in the market. There's no other platform doing stuff like this for us.
Right.
Obviously, you can go to itch.io, but that's, I don't know what it is about itch.io. It's just kind of like, it's cool. It's just not cool enough. it's there's nothing wrong with it, but there's nothing like outstanding about it. It's certainly not in a position to be claiming that it's competing with Steam or anything.
I feel like there's possibly like a user barrier, or it's mostly game devs that use it. So like, if you were just a game player and you didn't develop games and you went there to look for games, there's something like that feels a little bit risky about taking a random executable off a page that hasn't really gone through any approvals process. Like, I can upload it and it's immediately available, and you're like, ooh, I don't want to just launch like a .exe file. I don't know what that is.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, if you're not a heavy gamer who like does this kind of stuff all the time, I mean, like, to a certain extent, you know, we're as people,
what am
we're,
I?
Yeah, we're quite used. Well, we used to be used to like downloading torrents and stuff, and like, you know, pirating software and all of the. doing super dodgy stuff just because it was too expensive. Well, yeah, but because it was just too expensive to like pop into a game or whatever and find 40 quid to buy the game that you wanted, or even movies, you know, TV shows, all of this stuff that drove us to doing that kind of stuff. And now that there's like streaming platforms, we're all like very comfortable with paying for our subscriptions, and
yeah, everything feels comfortable because it's like behind a storefront, even though it's the same thing.
Yeah,
like we probably grew up in the time of LimeWire and having dodgy files that you're like, yeah, just click on that. Oh, there's about 50 pop-ups has happened. Whoopsie.
The wild, wild west of the internet has since calmed down. I have, to be honest with you, I wouldn't be surprised if it did come back with how all of the platforms are suddenly going to raising their prices and clamping down on users' usability and data scraping and all of this stuff. So I wouldn't be surprised if it started to rear its head again. But yeah, when it comes to platforms for indies, there's an interesting thing going on at Zola, actually.
What's that?
They have... I spoke to one of the representatives at PGC, Pocket Gamer Connects, and they were talking about a launcher that I don't know if you can like white label it so that you could have your own launcher, but they're certainly looking at some way of, if you buy a Zola game through the launcher, then you've got that on your computer, and so you download the game from whoever it is that you were trying to get the game from. Right. And then there's like, I think there's like a storefront on the installer that can show other games that you might be interested in that are with, obviously games that are being published through Zola, so that you could gain access that way. And that, I remember quite some time ago, I think it was Boss of Studios had their own launcher. And I, this is like 5 or 6 years ago, I was talking to someone who was looking to create a launcher that you could white label, and so I could release my game, so like Fribbly Studios games launcher. Obviously my player base audience would need to trust that the studio, but I don't see why they wouldn't trust, you know, there'd be enough like on the website or whatever, there'd be enough proof that we're a real thing doing real things, you know. They could very easily Google my name and see that I'm very much a developer doing exactly what I say I'm doing, I guess, you know. And at a certain point, you do become a trusted brand as an indie, especially if like your games are being streamed or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I think there is a way for us to take back that power. Mm-hmm. But then you end up with the pain point for gamers, which is that they probably aren't going to want to have a launcher from Fribbly Studios, a launcher from... like, you know,
just want it all in one place.
Yeah, yeah. They kind of want this centralized place. But yeah, at the moment, our choices are Steam, the console platforms, digital storefronts, Nintendo storefront or whatever, you know, and then itch.io. And I think, and obviously we can find ways of releasing our games through our own websites, but again, that's,
you'll never get the traffic unless you already have an audience, right?
But maybe there's a way, like TikTok does really well for content creators, and if you can be quite good on TikTok, then maybe you could drive that high volume of traffic to your website and stop relying on platforms that do nothing for you but take 30% of your
It's so much, isn't it? Like,
it's so
I'm
high.
I'm in my game dev journey, and I was like, every platform, 30%. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh well. And then you add taxes.
I do think that this means, I might even just end up doing this myself, to be honest. But like, I do think that this means that there's space for someone to come along and just undercut that, and you wouldn't even have to undercut it by too much in order to be better than what's currently on offer. As far as I'm aware, no one's doing it currently.
I don't know if Epic has a different percentage, because they're obviously trying to compete in that space, but I don't know if there's like the audience for it.
I think Epic do take a smaller cut, but but it operates different. I can't remember. I remember someone putting like side by side the because I've been doing research for when we release our game, so that I can project what we might make based on.
Yeah.
And then how much you're going to owe each platform.
I'm sure they won't let you have it. They'll take it first.
It's so insane that, like, there's all of this middleman process that just, like, especially for indies, man, we're so small.
Please.
And when you're just starting out, trying to get a foothold, and even if you made, or yeah, like if you had an okay launch or whatever, and you make what 10 to 50k, it's such a massive percentage of your money to be taken.
Yeah.
For doing nothing more than handing your launchable package to a platform that is going to hand it to a consumer.
Yeah, it's tricky because the actual function isn't that much, but in terms of like actually getting you players, you probably do earn a lot more than you would if you just put it on your website, and I don't think it would get anything. So it's a really difficult stuff because you don't want to give that money away, but you wouldn't have earned it if you hadn't.
I just don't think that 30% justifies what they do / don't do.
What would justify it?
Curation, if they actually bothered to clear up the storefront. Like, there's, because it's so easy to upload, easy to inverted commas to upload, especially when there was a really, I don't know how bad it is now, but there used to be like just so many asset flips and clones and just such a massive sea of trash. And then in order for you to be on the discovery, get discoverability, like there's no support. Like I said, there's no account manager for, like, if you upload and you have a problem, or if you have any problem with Steam, like, you can message them and they'll, like, from what I understand, you're mostly ignored.
So there is like customer support, but it's quite hidden between layers of stuff, because we had a problem where we uploaded our page and it was, I hadn't understood the survey, so I was like ticked it as like adult content, and what I didn't realize was that kind of means porn.
right.
And so no one could see the game unless they had like view adult content on, and so I had to go through them to get that removed, and then that kind of probably affected our launch of the Steam page. Never mind, lessons learned. But they do respond to it, but it can take like a few weeks. But yeah, it's not like someone you can ring up, or someone who manages your projects or whatever.
Yeah, they realistically, for the amount of money that they're making, and it wouldn't even be that hard to like check out the or ask for a certain set of references from each studio, so that you know who has like a registered company and is doing this seriously, and who is just like trying to make some bucks off of like a hobby game or whatever, and then you could dedicate an account manager to like a good bunch of people, like one account manager could probably manage upward of like 20 accounts, because it's not, there shouldn't be that much of an issue with each individual account, where someone would be like, oh my god, this is like a full week's worth of work. It should just be you help onboard them, you have discussions about where, because there's loads of stuff like how you tag yourself, all
like
the information,
optimizing that, and they know it because they do it every day, but each of us doesn't.
Yeah, and I mean, fortunately for us, you know, there are people out there who have like a lot of experience with this, and so we can go watch YouTube videos or whatever, or we can find consultants to talk to. And I think that Steam relies really heavily on the fact that that is something that exists. But yeah, for 30%, realistically, all they do is go, you can put your images, details on a page on our website. You can upload your game, and we will deal with handing it over.
And thank you for the money.
Yeah.
This magic number around like the 7k wish list, which I think is some sort of algorithm of curation, right? Because if you don't get that, you don't get as much traffic to your page. But it's, I don't fully understand how it works. Like, I just keep reading about it.
But even that means that, well, like, again, we have to game it. Like, we have to do some magical stuff in the background so that we can, again, it's just, it's all on us. There's no support. So if there was support, I'd be like, you want 30%? Cool, yeah, fine, whatever. Well, probably not, because it's still quite high. But, you know, at least it would be justifiable.
I think the awful thing as well is some of the AAA developers can negotiate with Steam to get that 30% down. So they probably have a better deal than some of us indies. And if anything, they need it less than us. Like, I wonder if it would be good, because I think with Unreal, you don't pay any like platform fees for the actual software until you make over 1 million. They could look at something like that with indies and say, well, your first 500k is yours to keep, and then we'll take a cut after that or something. Like, it doesn't have to be massive, but it makes a huge difference when you're a little developer. And it wouldn't be that much money for them potentially either, in the grand scheme of things.
The thing that they're clearly not considering is that if we had that little bit of extra support, then our studios might not have, like, 9 out of 10 indie studios fails. And normally are either before or after their first release. So if we were able to, you know, have like quite a cool release and it makes us enough money, then that extra 30% would be enough for us to live and make a second game and make more money. They would make more money because we were making more games.
Yeah.
We were surviving longer, but they're just like, no, we'll just cap your knees off and see if you can do it again. This time with no knees.
Like, I like my knees.
Yeah, I really like my knees. I use them to get around. No knees. Okay. And then the second release, the same again. Like, now do it without feet. Like, oh my God, come on.
You end up like the guy in Monty Python with no limbs by the end of your
game. Just a mere flesh wound. Come back here.
Onto some industry news. I mean, this is like last month now, but we didn't really talk about it in the last episode because we were focused on layoffs, was that Disney acquired a huge chunk of Epic, which is 1.5 billion, was it? Is that right? Yeah, that is right. It was so big that I had to check it. And it's probably a relatively small stake in the company, but I think we're seeing a lot more of this with massive corporations putting money behind things or buying out loads of studios. And I personally, every time I see stuff like that, I think, oh, not another, because it just creates this homogeny of content where all the games that you're putting out is purely based on what makes money. And it's
especially with something like Disney, we're gonna see, like, it might not be bad, but it probably won't be great. Look, we will probably see an influx of Disney IP in some games, and historically, you know, there's only a handful of Disney games that I can think of that I actually liked. I think one of them would be Aladdin.
Which one? Is
ages ago. So long ago that I didn't even realize that there was more than one.
I mean, I had an Aladdin game for Game Boy Color a long time ago. I wonder if it's the same.
I think this was on, what was it on? I think it was on a PS.
I'm gonna go
PS1, maybe?
Aladdin PS1. Oh, the nostalgia.
Right.
Oh yeah, that's definitely different from the Game Boy Color one.
The other one that I really loved was, I think it was either DuckTales. Oh, it was maybe those two of them. There was DuckTales, and there was a really eerie Mickey Mouse.
I know what you're talking about. What's the Mickey Mouse game?
It was just visually,
the Castle of Illusion. Is it that one?
Yeah, like a real visual trip of a game. But like, I spent hours on that game. So yeah, you know, so we might get, if we get content like that, happy days.
It's interesting because I actually really like a lot of the old classics, because I had Lion King on like the Game Gear, which, I mean, these are all like pixelated little situations because we're old people, but those kind of things were great. They were really good. And I feel like the huge investment into Epic is probably going to be more like massive, like realistic Marvel games and stuff. So I don't know how it's going to go, but
I think if they bring us some stuff like that, because the beauty about those games for me, I think the reason why they were so good is because the animation style of Disney, the fluidity of the movement was really important, that the characters looked and moved like the characters, which made for like really nice gameplay. But yeah, if they just go into like, or worst case scenario, they go into crossover this, crossover that, they're like, oh, can you, I mean, there's already some of that.
All the Kingdom Hearts.
I'm kind of okay with Kingdom Hearts. Like,
it's a much loved franchise.
I'm kind of okay with how they did that. That and like Smash Bros. You know, I'm okay with those kind of. They just feel like they make sense and are fun.
Cool.
But yeah, if they just start going blend, just because they can, you know, and endless money to throw at endless things. And just launch it all, and then we're in the same situation as, you know, we're all going to get knocked off the storefronts.
Just the Disney front, yeah.
And then on the other side of it, you know, whenever this happens, like, not, it tends to not even be that far down the line after these acquisitions happen that we see layoffs where they gut and strip and. That's the bit that we don't want.
Yeah, I read something. I mean, that definitely always happens. And then I read something about, it was something like a percentage of businesses, like quite a high percentage, tend to fail after acquisition anyway, within 5 years or something. Because the companies often, I mean, that's not necessarily the case for Disney, but for big things like Keywords and Tencent buying out loads of studios, and maybe even like things like Sumo, because we just see like constant acquisitions everywhere.
Yeah.
The studios already have an identity, and for the best will in the world, they'll say, yes, you can run independently and we won't take away what makes you you, but it's not the case. And I haven't really seen many studios
understand how those deals come about and run that way. I understand how they come about. They go, oh, that, you know, and, yeah, but honestly, it can't be enough of a kickback that the studio then dying off and, you know, like, I just, for me personally, when I buy things, and I'm pretty sure this would, you know, no matter at what stage or what level or what size I'm buying, I assume this would be the same case. I would always want it to be like long-term value. I would never look at something and go, I'm gonna buy this banana and then I'm gonna peel all the skin off it and throw it in the bin. Like,
or like sell it for like 1p when I bought it for a pound or whatever.
But like, yeah, I would want to enjoy it and have it like give me the energy that I would get from eating a banana. I wouldn't just peel off the skin, sell the skin to someone as like a trip up device. And then just lob the banana in the bin. Like, no. Like, acquisition should be that, like, you see a way for that studio to become part of your company and for it to help with long-term growth. Like, the studio should do better, should get bigger, not, like, strip it of all its assets, we made a big mistake. Like, how are you making that mistake? You took your time to make sure you were paying a rather large amount. I'm really happy that I can't remember which studio it was that like bought themselves back.
Oh, it was one of the Embracer Group studios, wasn't it?
Yeah, I'm really glad stuff like that is. But even that must have been so painful to be acquired and then to have to buy yourself back so that you don't end up like in the bin and losing all your stuff. Like, Christ.
It's such a painful thing to keep witnessing and seeing the same thing happening over and over again. And I haven't really seen many big companies responsibly acquiring and running companies, because I don't think that they actually know how to do that. They're just going, yeah, our shareholders have money, we'll put that into that. Oh no, it's not working, we'll get rid of it. And they're not really thinking about, like, how do we run a games company? Are they going to constantly increase profit forever? No, probably not. But, like, what's wrong with a business that, like, sustains, makes small profits? Like, if you've got millions of that, then you're making millions, right? There's no need for everything to be on this, like, massive upwards trajectory. It's just, like, not sustainable in the long term. And it's pointless.
So it's almost avoidable, isn't it? Getting, we get swept back into that conversation even when trying to talk about other things.
Like, sort it out. Well, we have the potential in the games industry to learn from history. It happened in the music industry, and, you know, like, the same with the film industry as well, in terms of a lot of the content that's in the cinemas is all the same kind of stories, and it's just repeated over and over. And the games industry, the good thing about it is we have the time and the chance to learn from all of that and do something different. Will we? I don't know. It's not up to me or you. We will, whether the big people do or not, that's up to them. But maybe there's some logic and sense in there too.
Yeah, I think us with our studios, if we start seeing, like, a certain level of success and someone goes, I'd like to acquire you, I'd be like, I'm all right, thanks. They'd be like, but you could. Yeah, I could. Like, but you could do, like, greater things if you joined us. For 5 minutes before you gut my studio. No, thanks.
Yeah, there is nothing in the world that would lead me to be acquired by anyone.
I would ask for the most stringent contract agreement that was like, if this is a mistake for you, you just put us back. Like, you caught this fish, you put it back as you found it. Like, you're not, none of this, like, selling us up or cutting us down so that you can, no stripping back.
Yeah. It's just never the reality. Like, I appreciate that studios, especially when they want to grow, which is not necessarily, like, my goal to go massive, because it's not enjoyable for me personally. But there may be some situations where you're like, I'm tired of the grind of constantly finding publishing, and this is a way to not be stuck in that rut of keep doing that. Yeah. Like, I think Double Fine sold out to Xbox, was it? A while ago. And they were a studio that I quite respect. And I don't think it's gone terribly for them, but it depends. I don't know what goes on behind the scenes, like any of these things, but maybe Sumo's one of the ones, because they bought out the Chinese Room. That's probably factual from memory. And the Chinese Room's another studio that always puts out really interesting games. And so I'm quite curious how their new releases are going to go now that they're acquired and they're not just, like, running as a really small studio. But I'd like to see more examples of it going well, rather than going badly. Let's see what happens. Anyway, we've got a few minutes left before Stuart has to run away, but we've had GDC on this last week, which, for anyone who doesn't know, is the biggest game developer conference in San Francisco, which I've never ever gone to. You just wait till Game Dev London.
There's that, but also I've heard from so many people this year who have said, I'm not going next year. Like this is the last time. Like, there's, and I'm admittedly, a lot of that is, you know, people who are UK based, and it's a massive expense to go over there.
It is.
And if you haven't spent all that money and gone all the way out there and come back with some kind of a deal with someone, or at least, you know, the potential of some deals on the table, then it's a massive expense for nothing, really.
It's tricky to measure the returns of that kind of thing as well, because I find a lot of these things, it might just be like planting seeds that's going to grow many, many years down the line, potentially, like contacts you make and things. So it's really hard to be able to justify the few thousand that is going to take you as a minimum if you're not going to recoup that.
On the other side of that, I keep hearing, like, just nightmare scenario stories. People being, like, followed around outside of the venue, and, like, you're people feeling unsafe if they're not inside the building.
It's like surrounded by sort of sketchy people who are going to come and take advantage of who they know are going to have potentially money.
And even, like, creepy and weird scenarios that come that happen in the venue. So I'm just like, yeah, I don't. You never really know. Like, some people say that it's, you know, it's to do with the area and stuff, and that needs to improve, and maybe GDC will recognize that and they'll just move it away from that base location.
I don't know. Maybe they won't. Could host such a massive event. I don't know.
Wow, there's like a lot of America. America's a pretty big place.
Just Route 66, very big.
Just move it to Mexico.
Sick, actually.
Move it to Mexico. They'd love it. Mexico would love it. And I would love to go, like, be like, I'm going to go to the biggest games conference in the world in Mexico. But yeah, it's a controversial one.
Yeah, it's tricky. It's I mean, I've never been, and I'm desperate to go every year, and I just watch all the news feeds like, I'm not there.
But I used to.
Yeah, old and bitter now.
Well, not even that. I never got around to going, and it's never felt like a big deal. Like there's enough events in the UK, and I now make like events in the UK, so I'm just kind of like, for me personally, directly, like it doesn't actually make sense already for me to go out there. Yeah. Unless I was to go out there and, I don't know. I was interested in going as part of the Yuki trade mission. Mm. But that's because the Yuki trade mission has like a whole bunch of stuff that they offer and they do for you and support that it's kind of outside of GDC. Like it happens over there and you go over there and you get hooked up with like... American counterparts and you know, businesses and services and stuff that are relevant to you. And you actually wouldn't even need to attend UDC itself because there's so much stuff that they do.
Yeah, totally.
Networking events and stuff that's all happening outside of it. So I was interested in that. And if that, I might continually try and go as part of that program. But yeah, GDC itself, I don't feel the FOMO.
You're lucky.
Yeah, between people's horror stories and I've not seen or heard of anyone like come back from GDC and be like, oh my god, that was the most amazing experience, and like this deal has happened, we're gonna make like this much money because of this, or like all of this stuff is in the background. It's always just been like, that was exhausting. I saw some cool stuff, or it was a nightmare. So
yeah.
So I'm like, okay.
I think I feel like it's like a badge of honor or like a true measure of success if you've done like a talk at GDC, right? I don't know.
Yeah.
It feels that way. But yeah, there's plenty of other amazing conferences, like Reboot Blue is coming up soon, and Develop we have in Brighton.
Yeah.
In the summer, which is by the sea. What more could you want?
Yeah.
Anyway, the final thing that came out of GDC was one of the talks mentioned about Neil Newborn, who is a Astarion's actor, and that most of you will know him for voicing and mocapping Astarion, but he actually does a lot of mocap work himself. He like consults on the process, and I think he even directed sessions with other actors. And there was an article that I'd mentioned, he came in. There's about 150 lines of dialogue that have been recorded with no mocap data at all. And he'd come in to what he described as a dog's breakfast. Not a dog's dinner, a dog's breakfast. I'm going to have to look up what that is. Maybe it's like a sunny side up. but he made all that mocap data for the dialogue that had been recorded. And I think it's quite cool to recognise how far all these actors go behind the scenes that you don't even know about, and to keep hearing about it.
He is an absolute legend.
Yes, he's lovely.
Yeah, I've met him in person. He's been on our podcast, I believe, in the one of the earlier.
How many hundred episodes ago?
Season 2.
Nice.
Season 3? I don't know. every year's been a new season. We've stopped that now. It's just episode 180 something.
Endless fun.
Yeah. But yeah, he's just incredible. And when I met him, he was talking to like some new voice actors, and was just openly, freely giving them tips and advice and stuff they were asking him questions and he was just free fountain of knowledge, like not even being like, oh, well, I could tell you, but maybe you should join a program that I will develop and create and release. And, you know,
he's a wonderful force for good. Yeah,
he's just amazing.
And anyway, our final piece of good news is, well, I don't know if it's good news for us, but Pokemon Snap is 25 years old today. That's bad news for us because it makes you question how old you actually are. But I think it's super cool. And there's also like the reboot on Switch. And that's it for this episode of How I Got Games For You. To find out more about us, you can visit gamedev.london or you can visit our Discord if you want to leave comments and network with other game devs. Thank you so much. Bye.